We are trying to implement policy that comes very, really close to home for, and I mean that figuratively, but I know it's literal as well, for some people who all of us want to protect. And I think that it's an area where the body should be exercising a great deal of caution. And one of the reasons that I feel cautious about it is that I sense that there is some lack of caution and some of what I would characterize as a backlash that is impacting the Children's Services Division right now with regard to their ability to respond to child abuse. At the same time, I think that it is very important that the policy of the state be that any police officer, any CSD official, anyone who was empowered to remove a child from the home be given some very strict criteria to follow before they do that. And all of that being said, I am going to move the Dash 6 amendments to House Bill 3198.
Representative Baumann moves the Dash 6 amendments, and I'll place that motion. Is there objection to those amendments?
Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
Let me just ask on the Dash 6 amendments. There are several pages of the amendments. Do I assume that from the page, there's very little substantive change from page, and this is the actual Legislative Council Dash 6 amendments, from page 2 on? And most of these changes, which talked about are most of these just Legislative Council drafting? Maybe I could ask staff.
From where to where, Bill?
Well, page 3, page 4, page 5.
I believe you get to the, there's a substantive amendment on page 6.
I see that.
Uh-huh. And I think that these other changes, I mean, the little A, capital A, that's just all kind of an internal, you know, relettering because of the addition of that extra.
All right. That would be my only question, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Baumann, you have a motion for the committee.
Move House Bill 3198 as amended to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
And I'll place that motion. Let me, in discussion, ask you, Representative Baumann, we have a fiscal analysis that's in here, and we need, that was based on language prior amendments, if I recall. Am I correct?
Can you show me your copy of the fiscal analysis?
I'll show you
my file is out of control.
Yes, we originally had a fiscal analysis dated March 25th, 1987, done by Mr. Dick Johnson from CSD. I assume that there will be some fiscal impact. Can you speak to that? And if so, I'm going to ask you to get that data updated, but I don't want to delay moving on the bill until we have that.
Mr. Chair, maybe we should just ask staff to ask fiscal to give us a fiscal impact statement for full committee.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
based on the new amendments,
I would like to ask that I'll join in that request. And
okay.
What I will do, Mr. Chair, is offer, especially given some problems that I've had with information and legislative fiscal analysis, to shepherd that through. And I'd like to invite the participants in. people who have participated up to now, CSD and the other experts on 3198, if they would help me with delivering information to legislative fiscal so we can get a good analysis here.
We have the motion before us, and I would hope that you would. I know you put a lot of energy into this, and I think there's further energy in making sure that the bases for the fiscal assumption that are used by the experts on number one floor in this building are correct, because they depend on whoever puts those in. And sometimes if an agency, CSD or others, has a different fiscal assumption, I think it would be very important for you to be involved. Anyway, we have the motion before us. Representative Baumann, I guess I want to ask you, and I know you went through this in detail, giving us the background. What does this bill do in about three or four sentences or less in relationship to the current law?
What it does is it tightens up the criteria for removal of a child from the child's home where, and I'm assuming the situation is that Children's Services Division or the police have received information that leads them to believe that there is a child in danger in the home.
Thank you. Motion is before us. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
Before we vote, could we kind of have a head shake so that we know for sure who is opposing and supporting the bill? We assume that CSD has strong concerns about the bill as amended. We assume that the Multnomah County DA's office has strong concerns as the bill is amended. City of Portland has strong concerns. Now, we assume that the Juvenile Rights Project is supporting the Dash 6 and that the Committee for Oregon Family is supporting.
Well, I don't think we will, and those are the, you know, we could go on forever with thinking of the interests that aren't here or opposed and not opposed. But, for the people that are here, please, go ahead.
Well, I don't think there's anybody else here that's
okay
working on this bill, is there? Okay.
Thank you. Further questions? Discussion? Hearing none, will you call the roll, please?
Bellman?
Aye.
Bellman?
Aye.
Dix?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye. Motion is adopted. Representative Baumann, will you be involved in the fiscal and carry the bill to full?
I will.
And I think we're on a speed-up mode in this committee with our June 10th date. I'm not sure. Council, will that be scheduled for Monday? For full?
I don't think it will be. I think it'll be scheduled for Tuesday.
Okay. We move out of work session on 3198 and into public hearing. Senate Bill 304. I suppose I ought to get the sign-up sheets here.
What?
Is there somebody signed up to testify on behalf of 304?
Which one? 304? Did we already do? Oh, yeah, we did.
To who? Out of who? You will if I do.
Well, I just invoking you.
I'll open the public hearing on SB 304. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Chairperson Hanlon, members of the subcommittee, my name is Sarah Baker Stifford, and I'm Public Affairs Director for the Oregon Rural Electric Cooperative Association. Briefly, my association represents 16 electric cooperatives serving some 235,000 Oregon consumers. Cooperatives are consumer-owned and nonprofit electric utilities governed by an elected board of directors. We're predominantly rural in nature, and the reason I come before you today is to support passage of Senate Bill 304. Senate Bill 304 proposes to reduce the cooperative dormancy or holding period for certain unclaimed property from 6 years to 4 years. And let me just briefly explain the circumstances that cause us to bring you this bill. In 1984, during a routine audit of Salem Electric by the Division of State Lands, the division asserted that certain unclaimed margins, or what we call capital credits, should be turned over to the Division of State Lands as abandoned property. Basically, capital credits are monies returned to our members after all expenses of the cooperative are met. The auditor referred Salem Electric officials to legislation passed by the 1983 legislature, which reduced the Division of State Lands holding period for unclaimed property from 7 years to 5 years. Now, because the capital in question had been held by the cooperative and unclaimed by the consumer for a five-year period, the auditor reasoned that the capital should now be declared abandoned and delivered to the Division of State Lands. Well, the problem we had with that reasoning is that ORS 62.425 requires the cooperative to hold that unclaimed credit or property for a period of 6 years, 1 year longer than the division's requirement, before declaring the unclaimed property abandoned. And once that property is abandoned, our cooperative statutes permit that the ownership of that capital revert to the cooperative. Well, because of this apparent statutory conflict, the Division of State Lands sought an Attorney General's opinion asking if the general abandoned property laws embodied in ORS 98 superseded the forfeiture provisions of ORS Chapter 62, the Cooperative Corporation Statutes. The Attorney General's opinion is attached and labeled Exhibit 1. Briefly, that opinion states that the general abandoned property laws administered by the division do not apply to our specific accounts that are forfeited under ORS Chapter 62. Let me say that the Division of State Lands, of course, abided by this opinion, and in seeking the division's input on and comment on Senate Bill 304, we have received a letter from the agency acknowledging the change that we are proposing in Senate Bill 304, and that letter is attached to our testimony and labeled Exhibit 2. We believe that a change is necessary to preclude any future legal challenges to the ability of the cooperatives to retain ownership of this capital. The bill, as I said, would require cooperatives to hold this unclaimed property for 4 years instead of the current 6-year period. With a 4-year holding period, which is 1 year less than the holding period for the Division of State Lands property, there can be no question as to the rights of our consumer members to retain this capital. It's the end of my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
What's forfeited?
What's forfeited?
Yeah. During the 6-year period that you want to make 4 years.
We return capital or money or what we call capital credits to our consumers. If those consumers
pay for what with your cooperative?
They pay for electricity.
Monthly electric bill.
Mm-hmm.
Money that somebody's left on deposit for a long, long time. No.
No.
Okay, then I don't understand. That's why I'm asking.
Understand. Mr. Chairman, our cooperatives charge our consumers for the cost of energy and the cost of operating the cooperative. Because we are nonprofit, we are required to return any excess revenues back to our consumers. And it is this excess revenue that we call capital credits. And those credits are indeed credited to the consumer and paid back on a revolving basis. But, of course, people move and don't leave their forwarding
address. Revolving basis, how, once a year?
If there is a margin or an excess in revenues, that amount is credited for that year to the consumer. but most of our cooperatives are on a longer revolving basis. Some of them return these credits on a 20-year basis, but it's always a first-in, or most often, a first-in, first-out basis. So if I had a credit put onto my account for 1963, and the cooperative was in a financial position to pay back that credit in 1986, we would go back to that credit in 1963 and pay that consumer for that amount of credit due to them in 1963.
What's the great benefit of this bill by reducing the time period? Or what's the great difficulty the co-op is having for having the 6 years?
Mr. Chairman, I wouldn't say that there's a great difficulty. All we would like to assure is that down the road, if administrations change or if Attorney General's opinions change, we would not be caught in, again, another situation with the Division of State Lands saying that, indeed, this unclaimed property belongs to the Division of State Lands instead of to our member consumers.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bauman.
I just missed a beat there. I thought the unclaimed property was excess money.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it is?
Yes, it is.
We're not talking about real estate or telephone poles, or we're talking about money.
Yes, ma'am.
And the Division of State Lands claimed money out of the account of a cooperative? Was that the situation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bauman, they attempted to when they were auditing our books. Utility deposits, per se, let's say I'm a new consumer and I put a deposit down and live there for a while and leave town, and that deposit is still on hold with the utility, that deposit is the type of money that the Division of State Lands audits us for and has legal authority to take, and we give it to them. But this is money that was, as a result of excellent operating procedures, available to return to the consumer. And the difference in our holding periods for abandoned property, that of the Division of State Lands and that of cooperative corporations, is what has caused the confusion.
Judy, you look at page 2 of their testimony. All it says is that they have to hang on to it by law, the co-op, for 6 years, and State Lands has a 5-year statute to come after unclaimed property. And so if they're holding on to it beyond the 5 years of State Lands, this bill says make it 4 years so that then the cooperative can claim it rather than the State Lands. Now I got it.
Okay.
Does that make
okay.
sense?
That makes sense.
Okay. Any further questions? Mr. McCauley, you're signed up.
Dave Dix had a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dave?
I didn't have a question.
Oh. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm John McCauley representing the Agricultural Cooperative Council of Oregon, and our purpose in testifying today is just to support Senate Bill 304. I think Sarah has explained the bill, and we have really nothing further to add to what she's explained.
What's your hidden agenda, and how many times has State Lands come after your cooperative assets?
Mr. Chair, I have no hidden agenda, and as far as I know from our membership, there has been no attempt by the Division of State Lands to come after this type of credit.
Thank you. I will. Any further testimony on the bill? I'll close the public hearing and open the work session. Representative Dix.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 304 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
And I'll place that motion. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair, I think that I encourage all groups of people, whether it's electricity or agriculture. I have always encouraged my constituents to form cooperatives, whether it's to buy groceries or anything else. And I think that the issue speaks for itself. This is cooperative members' money, and we should provide the opportunity for the cooperative to get that money back to their consumers inside the cooperative, rather than the land board being able to go after it after 5 years because they're under a 6-year law. So.
Further discussion.
Mr. Chair, I just want everybody to know that the money is going back to the cooperative because people are usually no longer can be found to give their credit back to them.
Right, but they were those people who move, or if I might, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dix, go ahead.
Those people who move or were one-time members of the cooperative, which is an organization developed for a variety of reasons, agriculture, to provide electricity to group people or whatever. It's almost a membership organization. I think it is a membership organization, in fact, and if they don't care enough to leave a forwarding address, I don't see that we should provide the opportunity for the land board to go after the money. I would think it would stay within that organization.
Further discussion? Hearing none, call the roll, please.
Aye.
Bellman.
Aye.
Aye. Allen.
Aye. Motion is adopted. Representative Dix, will you be here?
We'll open the public hearing on Senate bill. Please note, committee members, these are Senate bills. 482. And I will call Les Gagman.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Les Gagman. I am Division Director for the Mental Health Program in Douglas County. I'm here today representing the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Program Directors and to ask your favorable support for Senate Bill 482. In 1985, legislators allowed community mental health program directors under ORS 426.215 to authorize a peace officer hold for the purpose of taking persons into custody for mental holds under certain conditions. Those community mental health programs which have used this provision have found the process beneficial and effective. Nine counties currently utilize this provision as part of their emergency mental health care. We are not aware of any serious problems with this provision.
Nine counties used it?
Nine counties currently have put it into implementation, correct.
And who are they and how many have been taken into custody under it? What counties?
There are 50 individuals on whom this process has been used since the implementation. Clackamas, Columbia, Curry, Jefferson, Multnomah, Polk, Lake, Union, and I also have Lynn, Lane, and Josephine that reported having used the process. So that would be 3, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 counties. I stand corrected.
How does this fit in with the civil commitment bill?
It is a part of the civil commitment for the bill that is currently being considered for revision. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I can't answer that question.
Representative Bauman, go ahead. Did you have something written you were going to hand in? To?
Yes, I did. I gave something to the clerk prior to the...
Okay. Do we have that, Council? Thanks. Representative Bauman has a question for you.
Does this mean that peace officers are delivering dangerously mentally ill people into mental health treatment facilities or into jails?
Into mental health treatment facilities, into hospitals. What this provision allows is for the mental health program director to ask for the assistance of a peace officer to have somebody picked up and taken to a hospital, to a treatment facility. And at that point in time, the person is evaluated by physicians to see if they're dangerous to self or others. And then they may or may not be held pending the involuntary commitment process. It is very similar to the police officer hold statute, with the exception that the mental health director is the one who asks the officer for the assistance, and the officer doesn't have to make that independent judgment that he sees the person to be a danger to himself or others. It is a method by which we are able to bring the person into care notify the courts, implement the investigation process, and then have a regular civil commitment hearing if within 5 days, if that's what's indicated. It has been, I think, used mostly in those rare instances, in fairly rare instances, when mental health staff have information that is very difficult for an officer maybe to observe.
Mr. Chair?
Sure, go ahead, Representative Bauman.
I'm sure this is found someplace else in the statute, or I hope it is. Who makes the determination that a mentally ill person is dangerously mentally ill?
If the mental health program director has cause to believe this person is a danger to self or others, then he would ask the officer under this statute to please pick up the individual and have them taken to the hospital. That time they'll be evaluated by a physician prior to admission to the hospital. Following admission, the courts will be notified. An investigator from the mental health program will come out and do an investigation for the court. If a hearing is indicated, then the person will be brought to court, and there will be two independent examiners who will make an examination and recommendations.
Thank you.
I'm just looking at the statute, Chapter 743, which is temporary from last time, which you're proposing to make permanent. And I still, how does that fit in with the civil commitment once again? Are the standards different? Does it relate to a different point in time?
No. The standards are not there. The standards are not different.
Dangerous to self or to any other person, and who the director or designee has probable cause to believe there is a need for immediate care, custody, or treatment.
Correct, and that is the same requirement for a police officer who is out in the field and sees an individual. If he has cause to believe the person is a danger to self or others, the officer can take the person into custody, transport him to the hospital. What this provision does is allow the mental health program director to do that, or his designated staff, to do that same kind of thing. And it is always preferable, and from a service delivery standpoint, to have the officer make that determination and do it, bring the person to the hospital. But there are some times and some instances when we need to move quickly.
I guess what I'm asking is, how does this bill fit together with the pending bill before this committee on civil commitment? Or does it at all? It seems it's the same subject matter, and that's why I ask.
I believe it is consistent with what is with the other bill. I must apologize.
You haven't looked at that.
I don't know that other bill well enough to be able to. But I
think we'd be interested. Committee, we ought to look at that before.
Yeah. I have a
Chair,
comment on
we
that.
We have John McCullough here, and he probably could tell us.
Sure.
It's been involved.
I'm sorry. Are there further questions of this witness? Mr. Gagnon, did we cut you off? Have you gotten something further to say?
No, if you have my written testimony, that's fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're not signed up. Do you have a comment?
Mr. Chair, John McCulley, representing the Oregon Psychiatric Association. I just happened to see the bill lying over on the table today. I wasn't prepared to testify on it. If I recall what the bill says and what the, and I think you've had the testimony that describes it, I don't think it is directly related to to the civil commitment bill that you have before the committee.
Why don't I just put it this way? I don't intend to open the work session on it today. Mr. McCauley, will you work with counsel, and I'll ask Virginia also to check with Bill Taylor and to make sure that we're not doing overlapping things or interfering one foot with the other. I really think that's appropriate, rather than try and pull from your memory what you recall from two years
ago. I'm totally unprepared to discuss it, but I'd be happy to do that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anybody else that wishes to speak? Representative Dix.
When will the civil commitment bill be up again?
Tomorrow.
Okay.
We'll close the public hearing on 482, and open it on SB 173, Mr. Linden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bill Linden, the State Court Administrator. SB 173 is a judicial department bill, and it would amend ORS 2.165 to expand the kinds of publications covered by our court publications account. The court publication account right now is used to as the funding mechanism for the bound volumes of our appellate and tax court opinions and advance sheets. It's a self-supporting enterprise type of fund, which means basically that the costs of producing those volumes of